Thank you for tuning in to CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Democracy Watch, the News Collective's weekly hour-long news report, bringing you alternative and undercovered current affairs coverage from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. I'm Alex DeBoer.
And I'm Ryan Patrick Jones. It's Thursday, December 14th at 5:04 p.m., and we're broadcasting from UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Today we bring you a special extended episode of Democracy Watch. You'll hear an hour and a half of local alternative news coverage. Part of the coverage involves countering mainstream news accounts of last weekend's pro-Palestinian rallies in downtown Vancouver, held in resistance to Donald Trump's announcement that the U.S. will move its embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Mainstream news networks like CTV and Global News focused heavily on the burning of an Israeli flag. But Democracy Watch reporters attended both rallies and will bring you a broader account of all the events that took place over those 2 days.
We also have two exclusive interviews, one with Sam Heller, Managing Director of Hillel BC, the largest Jewish student organization in Western Canada, as well as an interview with hate crime victim Noor Fadel, who attended Friday's pro-Palestine rally to oppose religion-based discrimination and hate. We also have an original report from a forum held last Friday, December 8th, on the City of Vancouver's development of a policy to preserve legacy businesses in Chinatown. And now for headlines from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland.
Site C Dam given approval by NDP. On Monday, the BC NDP government announced its decision to complete the controversial Site C hydroelectric dam project. Premier John Horgan said that while it is not a project his government would have begun on its own, it has to be completed in order to avoid major rate hikes on electrical power and because $2 billion has already been invested in the project. The government concluded that canceling the Site C dam would have resulted in a 12% increase in hydro rates by 2020, and that rates would more than double compared to the current ones after 2020. The Site C dam will displace farmers and submerge indigenous lands as it floods over 5,000 hectares of the Peace River Valley in BC in order to generate hydroelectricity for British Columbians. Construction on the project was stalled after cost overruns and questions over the electricity, whether the electricity was necessary. Immediately after the announcement, environmental and Indigenous groups voiced their opposition. Green Party leader Andrew Weaver expressed his displeasure, saying that the project is no longer a Liberal boondoggle, but the responsibility of the government in power. Premier John Horgan acknowledged the harm to Indigenous communities that will be caused by the decision. He said he was not the first person to disappoint Indigenous peoples in BC, comments which drew criticism for their perceived insensitivity. The dam is expected to be completed around 2024, although more delays are likely.
Federal by-election in Surrey results in Liberal win. Liberal Party of Canada candidate Gordie Hogg won a federal by-election on Monday in the riding of Surrey-White Rock, upsetting the Conservative Party candidate Carrie Lynn Finlay. Hogg, a former MLA, won 47.5% of the vote against Finlay's 42.1%. The seat was left vacant after former Conservative MP Diane Watts stepped down to run for the leadership of the BC Liberal Party. Three other national by-elections took place on the same day, with the Liberals capturing a total of 3 seats and the Conservatives taking 1. The race in Surrey-White Rock is seen as significant because it's the second time since Andrew Scheer became leader of the Federal Conservative Party that the Conservatives have lost a by-election to the Liberals when the incumbent was a Conservative. The NDP achieved a distant third in all 4 by-elections, an ominous sign for the new NDP leader, Jagmeet Singh.
City of Vancouver approves 2018 budget. The Vancouver City Council voted yesterday to approve the city's budget for next year, but not without some last-minute controversy. City staff originally recommended a 3.9% property tax hike, but Vision Vancouver councillor Raymond Louis introduced a last-minute amendment to increase it by another 0.34%. The amendment was passed with 7 votes in favor and 4 against. The property tax increase means the average homeowner will pay an extra $92 per year, and the average strata owner will pay another $32 per year. Councillor Louis said the additional $2.4 million in revenue to the city will be used for housing initiatives, social grants, initiatives to make amends for Vancouver's historic discrimination against Chinese people, and an attempt to have Chinatown recognized as a UNESCO heritage site. NPA councillor George Affleck was outraged at the move. He went as far as to interrupt Councillor Louis while Louis was speaking to the media after the vote, saying, quote, "This is complete BS." During the following exchange, Affleck accused Vision of playing politics, saying that Vision brought forward this tax increase in order to have a reason to attack NPA councillors in the coming election for being weak on housing. Louis argued that the proposal was made after hearing feedback from the public since the budget was originally proposed last month.
Hillary Clinton pays a visit to Vancouver. The venerable and defeated Hillary Rodham Clinton drew thousands of people to the Vancouver Convention Center on Wednesday. The event was the last stop of a book tour promoting her book, What Happened, which gives her side of what went wrong during the 2016 U.S. presidential election. The former secretary and 2016 Democratic Party presidential nominee shared her views on a range of issues, including the previous night's election in Alabama, where Democrat Doug Jones upset Republican Roy Moore in the deeply conservative state. Clinton said she feels a tiny bit less worried after the Democratic upset. She thinks people in America are starting to turn against the ideology and philosophy promoted by President Donald Trump and its mastermind, Steve Bannon.
Those were this week's headlines from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. You're listening to a special extended edition of Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. We're going to take a short break and then hear an original report on how Vancouver hopes to protect legacy businesses in Chinatown. Stay tuned.
What newspapers and magazines did you regularly read to stay informed and to understand the
world? I read most of them, again, with a great appreciation for the press, for the media.
But like, what ones specifically?
All of them.
Want to know more than Sarah Palin? Join CITR's Current Affairs Coordinator Alex DeBoer every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. in room 2514 in the AMS Nest to learn best practices for covering local current affairs topics for radio. The weekly training sessions will cover writing for radio, determining newsworthiness, media ethics, interviewing, writing balanced stories, and more. The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire,
Cheetos,
fleece material,
and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
Album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute.
Just visit CITR.ca/Discorder/contribute.
You can grab it around town or read it at Discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
And we're back. This is Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Alex DeBoer. We just heard headlines from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. We'll now turn to an original report from a forum held last Friday, December 8th, in Chinatown. This forum explored how the City of Vancouver can best design and implement a policy to preserve legacy businesses in Chinatown. The story was reported on by News Collective member Christina Song, with editing and production by Song and Olamide Olanian. Here's the story.
I'll be the MC for this event tonight. I want to acknowledge that this event is taking place on unceded Coast Salish territory.
On December 8th, the City of Vancouver held a public forum on Chinatown legacy businesses. It is part of an ongoing study on how best to preserve Chinatown businesses that have historic significance or are vital to the Chinatown community. In the past, Chinatown residents have criticized the city for not addressing the issues of displacement in Chinatown. it has become increasingly difficult for low-income citizens and businesses to exist in areas when condos and other more profit-driven real estate projects are gaining ground. The forum included presentations from consultants and city officials. A discussion was opened to attendees on how they would define a legacy business. It also allowed residents to speak passionately on why they felt these businesses needed protection.
Why is it all boarded up? Because you come along and says this property is going to be worthwhile. Instead of $500,000, your assessment is going to be $3 million, so the rent got up how many 1,000%. So you have to do the basic. The foundation basic is start at the city, which you are doing. Congratulations.
Helen Ma is a planner for the City of Vancouver, currently leading the research on legacy Chinatown businesses. She spoke to Democracy Watch about the aim of the forum.
So today we have a forum to share results, preliminary findings about legacy businesses in Chinatown. So we have our consultants sharing preliminary findings about draft definition for legacy businesses. We also really want to hear from participants what they think of these draft definitions and why they think legacy businesses are so important.
The speaker at the forum asked attendees what they valued most in these businesses. Do they have historic or cultural significance? Are they accessible and affordable for residents of Chinatown? Do they support seniors? One of the speakers was Bill Yuen. He is a researcher for Heritage Vancouver, a nonprofit organization not affiliated with the City of Vancouver. He gave a general description of what one might consider legacy business.
So this is a very general definition of a heritage business. I don't know if everyone can see this, so I'll just read it out. A business that is shaped by values from a shared past that is recognized and deemed important by the communities of people who value that heritage, frequent the business, and or the area.
Another speaker at the event was Jun Chow, co-founder of Youth Collaborative for Chinatown and a research consultant on the study. She presented several different case studies, concrete examples of businesses that might be considered a legacy business.
A Chinese bookstore that is, you know, quite indicative of the publishing heritage of Hong Kong, and through print material, Chinese language print materials really maintain the connection of overseas immigrants with their homeland, and specifically waves of educated immigrants who came from China after the Cultural Revolution and from Hong Kong.
There was an unconventional case study included in the presentations to test what a business legacy might mean. The case study was a newly opened restaurant, Chinatown Barbecue. It has received a lot of press about its efforts to preserve Chinatown traditions and to hire former employees of recently shuttered businesses. It is also a source of low-cost dining options.
And then finally, Chinatown Barbecue, because we wanted to test a new business and whether it might be considered. So this is Chinatown Barbecue is newly opened in Chinatown, and it's really, the traditional Cantonese cuisine and cultural practice of siu mei, of barbecue meats, and as a reflection of very strong neighborhood history, Chinatown history, and barbecue meat protests of the late 1970s. Really reflective of the area's rich history of community activism, resistance, and perseverance against discriminatory government policies. So, really speaking to the community and community memory and identity and nostalgia. It's a real celebration of the heyday, the 1960s Chinatown, but it was really vibrant. And staff-wise, so with Cantonese speaking, all the staff speak Cantonese as well as English, and if you've been keeping up, they're actually carried over from the Gungobu or Daisy Garden where it burned down from fire. So they are the original staff from the community and also the original barbecue meat recipes. And then pricing, I know they've tried to make it quite affordable, not too many things above $10, and you'll see it with a lot of seniors enjoying the comfort foods.
Jun Chow expanded further on why businesses were having difficulties remaining in Chinatown and why retaining them in the neighborhood is crucial.
Why do you think that we need to value keeping these businesses in Chinatown? Well, I think there is a coming around and back to the neighborhood and its values. So we've actually seen some examples of that where young Chinese Canadians or Chinese Americans who do have that university education, they're actually making the choice. And that's actually one of my case studies, Gan Wai Dim Sum. It's like newly second generation. That's actually the young, he's like 27 years old, and he became the CEO, taking over the business after his father was diagnosed with like illness, and then the family business was in jeopardy. And he was poised to go to, he's actually trained in opera singing, if you can believe it, at UBC, and was poised to go for graduate studies in New York and become like a perform an opera singer, right, on the world stage. And he said, no, this is more important to me. You know, my father's business, what my father has built up, and this community, and being able to provide for Chinese seniors and be there for the low-income Chinese seniors, you know, that's a personal value that you have.
The forum came a month after the rejection of the proposed development on 105 Kiefer Street. This proposal was strongly opposed by different Chinatown community groups, such as the Chinatown Action Group and Chinatown Concern Group, and was ultimately turned down by the City of Vancouver's Development Permit Board. The decision was a watershed moment, as the board had not rejected an application in over a decade. Carnegie Community Action Project, or CCAP, is a group that studies housing, income, and land issues in the downtown East Side. They recommended in their report on retail gentrification that the city implement policies to stop new zones of exclusion. They define zones of exclusion as areas with few affordable amenities for citizens in low-income neighborhoods. In the case of Chinatown, it means that affordable grocers and Chinese herb stores are replaced with upscale grocery stores, cafes, restaurants, and luxury retailers. There are no concrete plans yet on how the city will support Chinatown businesses. I talked to Eric, whose family has owned and operated a business in the neighborhood for many years, about what he thinks of the city's efforts.
I grew up here, so I definitely remember actually coming to the Chinese Cultural Center to like learn Chinese every Sunday, and also going grocery shopping and buying barbecue meats with like my grandmother and stuff. So I definitely have, as a true Vancouverite, I definitely have a nice tie to the neighborhood. I think it's really important. I think that it's definitely something that would definitely help the community and the neighborhood moving forward.
Thank you so much.
I'm Christina Song from Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM.
And we're back. You're listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. You just heard headlines and a report on Vancouver's plans to preserve legacy buildings in Chinatown. We'll now hear a short interview with Noor Fadl. As Democracy Watch reported in our headlines last Thursday, Fadl was attacked by a man on Vancouver Transit last week. The man assaulted her by uttering verbal threats, trying to grab her hijab, slapping her across the face, and attempting to force her face towards his crotch. Only one bystander came forward to help her. Democracy Watch reporter Rematullah Sheikh interviewed Fadl on Friday, December 8th, while she was in attendance at the emergency rally for Jerusalem, which Democracy Watch was covering at the time. Take a listen to their conversation.
Learn from that incident.
One thing for sure is that that racism does exist in Canada, and I hope other people are aware of that now. Something else I learned is that sometimes when you want your body to react a certain way, it's going to give up on you. So for people to be aware of that, if you ever see someone in danger or, you know, looking like they're kind of struggling, not in a safe area, just stand up. And if you can't stand up, do something, you know, at least.
But there was one person who did stand up.
So yes, there was.
What about that one? How did that make you feel?
It was at the moment I wasn't really paying attention to the fact that he stood up. Well, in a way I did. He pushed the guy away from me and then stood by me. What I really appreciated from him was that even though he pushed the guy away, he could have stayed on the train, but he decided to get off with me and to stay with me the entire time. It really took me by surprise, because even after he pushed the guy away and stood in front of me, he could have easily decided to stay on the train, but he didn't. He got off. He spoke to 911 with me. I couldn't really breathe at that time. He got off. He waited until paramedics came. He waited until the police came. He gave a statement. He did it all voluntarily. So he really went that extra mile that maybe to him wasn't really anything. It was just the thing that he thought he should do. But it went far and beyond for me.
Was this the first time that you've ever been physically assaulted? Because you did say in another interview that you've had like undercurrents of racism against you, but never really physical assault.
Never really physical. You always see people talk, do you know what I mean? But no one really has the guts to really actually physically do something to you. So as much as it's sad to say I'm used to the verbalness from people being aggressive to me, it completely took me by surprise. And the thing is, he had his hand up, so you knew that he wanted to hit me, but I really, really did not think that he would actually do it. But, you know, the moment he, like, tried to force my head onto his crotch is when I realized this guy can really do about anything at this moment, and I just have to cooperate.
And what's been the response of people in Vancouver especially?
I've been having a lot of support. I have over 7,000 messages, you know, message requests from people just kind of saying they support me and stand with me. But as well, I have around like 200, 300 people saying, you know, go back to your country, you know, this, that. But other than that, they don't really matter to me. They don't know who I am. I know who I am better than they ever will. And so just the support has been great. The transit police have been super, super supportive as well. They've really been helping me with everything and just trying to stay positive as best as I can.
Yeah. So you're at a Palestinian rally. And do you see some parallels between standing up for human dignity and with your own story?
For sure. You know, I wanted to come out here and support just as people were supporting me. You know, this isn't just about Palestine. This isn't just about the Muslim people. This isn't just about me. It wasn't an attack just on me. It was on all minorities, really. And, you know, we live in a diverse city and we really have to just be kind to one another and to respect each other, no matter what faith, no matter what religion, no matter what race or what our beliefs are in the end. You know, we live side by side with each other, so it's better to become a community rather than everyone kind of going against each other.
Does this sort of change how you're going to travel from here on? Is there going to be a change in how you conduct yourself?
For sure. Honestly, like, I took the transit here with my little sister and I feel like every single eye is on me, even if it really isn't. It's a traumatic experience. As much as I want to say I'm strong and like no one can bring me down, which no one can bring me down, but I think that for the couple of, you know, the next few days, few weeks, few months, it's just going to be me just, you know, being vulnerable as best as I can and just to not be okay for a little bit in order to allow myself to heal quicker.
Yeah. So the person who did that to you has been caught by the RCMP, I'm not wrong.
He's been caught by the transit police, actually, yeah. So they did arrest him. He was in court, I believe, like 2 days ago, a day ago, and they're going to go again. I haven't really been updated on those matters yet. Transit police do stay with me as best as they can and, you know, update me on what they can, but they're kind of doing their job. I'm just wanting to spread out the awareness as best as I can.
So if you ever had a chance to stand in front of him and question him as to what he did or tell him anything, what would be your words?
I hope I don't have to stand in front of him, but at the same time, if I would have to face him, I would honestly say that I forgive you. You can't hold things against people, you know. I don't know what he had to experience in his life in order to feel this way towards Muslim people. You know, he must have had something in the past or, you know, heard something. So I just hope that he can get the help that he needs and to, you know, realize that you just shouldn't judge someone by their appearance and just to respect. And I hope that he can find the peace within himself and the self-love for himself in order for him to love others.
What's that?
Thank you for listening. That was a Democracy Watch interview with Noor Fadel, the victim of a religiously motivated hate crime on Vancouver Transit. We're now turning to the weekend's two rallies for Palestine, where Democracy Watch encountered Fadel.
In response to Donald Trump's recent recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital, local organizers responded by holding an emergency rally for Palestine that took place in downtown Vancouver on both Friday and Saturday. Mainstream media outlets like CTV and Global News focused their coverage on these rallies on the burning of the likeness of an Israeli flag, suggesting the burning and the protests as a whole were anti-Semitic rather than anti-Israel. As part of this special broadcast, Democracy Watch explores whether there is a difference between these two things. First, we have an original story and overview of the two rallies. This piece was reported on by Aidan Tong, Rahmatullah Sheikh, and Alex DeBoer. It was edited by Rahmatullah Sheikh, myself, Ryan Patrick Jones, and it was produced by Alex DeBoer.
Free Palestine! Free, free Palestine!
From the river to the sea!
From the river to the sea!
Palestine will be free!
Palestine will be free!
On Friday, the 8th of December,
Some of Canada's Palestinian diaspora and people representing diverse communities took to the streets of downtown Vancouver. The crowd, numbering in hundreds, braved the bitter cold of the evening in response to a controversial decision taken in the warm chambers of the White House in the United States. Just 2 days earlier, U.S. President Donald Trump officially recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and announced America's plan to relocate the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
I have determined that it is time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. While previous presidents have made this a major campaign promise, they failed to deliver. Today, I am delivering.
No justice, no peace! No justice, no peace! No justice, no peace!
When President Trump made his stands on Jerusalem public, it sparked worldwide condemnation and demonstrations in major cities across the world, from Istanbul and Beirut to Jakarta and Toronto. 2 days of protests were held in Vancouver, the first of which took place on Friday, starting at the steps of the U.S. consulate and ending at the Vancouver Art Gallery. Members of CITR's News Collective, Alex DeBoer, Aidan Tong, and I, Rahmatullah Sheikh, covered the demonstrations as they unfolded in Vancouver. The rally was marked by banners, speeches, songs and chants that ran throughout the evening. At the December 8th rally in Vancouver, protesters used the crowd's momentum to bolster support for the Palestinian cause and send a strong message to world leaders. Here's Sophia Soufi, co-president of Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights, an organization in the University of British Columbia that has been at the forefront of the Boycott, Divest, Sanctions or BDS movement on campus.
The U.S. has no right to proclaim it wants peace. This is not the pathway to peace. It is the pathway to ethnic cleansing and denying Palestinians their rights, their home, their land. We are also here to show Justin Trudeau that we as Canadians do stand with our Palestinian brothers and sisters, and that we want our government's policies to reflect our morals and values and not the interests of foreign governments. Jerusalem does not belong to Israel, and the U.S., a foreign colonial power of itself, cannot give it away. If all the previous acts of blatant state terrorism was not proof enough, this is definite proof that the only peace solution that Israel and Netanyahu will accept is one where they outline all the terms and where their colonial interest project is successful and complete and where there is no viable Palestinian state. It is time for the world to wake up and stand strong with our Palestinian brothers and sisters.
We spoke to Sophia at the rally and asked for her thoughts on Trump's announcement and how this affects Palestinian community in Vancouver.
What do you think the ramifications of Trump's decision with Jerusalem will have on Palestinian rights and on a future Palestinian home?
Well, I think that, first of all, it shows that the United States and Israel are not looking towards a peaceful two-state solution, but hopefully it's a step towards the world realizing how much it's a serious issue and that we need to actively work towards a peace solution where Palestinians' rights are not ignored, as this is clearly demonstrating, because Jerusalem is such a holy city for so many people. To just claim it as the capital of Israel is blatantly denying Palestinians of just basic rights and just ignoring their existence even.
And as co-president of Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights, how do you think Palestinian students feel at UBC when they see things like this happen in their own home?
I'm not Palestinian myself, but from what I hear, they are of course disappointed. It's a lot of, they can't believe that this would actually happen, even though it's shocking but not surprising that this would happen. And they really feel, from what I hear, again, I can only speak for the few I've spoken to, they feel let down a little bit by the international community. And of course by the United States as well.
These sentiments were shared by Sarah Sager, who organized the demonstrations in Vancouver.
That's going to embolden the state of Israel. That's going to give them more permission to kill Palestinians, to encroach on neighboring nations as they have been doing, getting crossing into borders into Lebanon and Syria. So we see Israel as an aggressor in the region, and we're concerned about people's lives when Trump makes such an irresponsible announcement that's going to result in much death and bloodshed.
I think Trump's move in Jerusalem was provocatory.
Yusuf Salameh is a first-year student at UBC's Sauder School of Business. His parents currently reside in the West Bank, another sensitive territory which has been under Israeli control since the Six-Day War in 1967.
Under UN and international law, Jerusalem doesn't belong to any state at the moment.
Yeah.
So for him to push and say that Jerusalem is the capital, the eternal capital of Israel, it really pushes the Palestinian peace process aside and everything that, as Palestinians, we've been marching for the past 68 years.
Okay.
So it's just pushing everything aside, right? And it's leading to, I guess, more pushing the Israeli occupation more onto the Palestinian people and forgetting about our rights to have a free land and free travel and access within the West Bank and Gaza.
What significance does that have on the Palestinian diaspora in Vancouver and the Palestinian diaspora in UBC? Like, how do they feel?
Well, knowing that since 70 years ago, people have been protesting almost every single day. And, for example, I have a lot of us in the Palestinian diaspora have family members over there, and most of them are our age, very young, and we communicate with our cousins and everything that they would have protest every Friday after prayers and everything. So it's very, for us, it's very encouraging to see them protesting, even though the older generation is dying off and the new generation still keeps that, I guess, protest going on.
Yusuf also explained to Democracy Watch that despite being a Canadian citizen, he faces the same challenges as other Arabs when visiting home.
I was just there 3 months ago, and I go every single year. And my family lives in Hebron, which is the most, the most restricted city in the West Bank. So for me as a Canadian citizen and a student at UBC going over there, my Canadian passport's really useless over there. Like, I get treated the same way as a Palestinian gets treated. It's really, you can really see, I guess.
Why is that?
Well, because regardless of what your nationality is, if your ethnicity is from the Middle East or Palestinian, you get treated regardless as a second-class citizen under Israeli law. So whether you're at the bus stop or whether you're traveling in the airport, you get extra security, you get patted down, you get asked questions, you get pushed aside, while someone with, like, for example, an American tourist gets 10 times more rights than you do.
Like the US and a handful of other nations, Canada has joined Israel in opposing a UN resolution in favor of Palestinian self-determination. Sarah Sager, the organizer of last weekend's rallies, wants to hold Canada accountable for its pro-Israeli stance. She says that the history of Palestinian occupation is not very different from the plight of indigenous groups in Canada.
We believe that Canada is unjustly and illegally supporting the State of Israel, while the State of Israel is in violation of international law and is in violation of Canadian policy on Israel as well. So when the State of Israel asserts sovereignty over the city of Jerusalem, that's an illegal action, because in international law, Israel has no right to sovereignty over that city. You know, the situation is actually very close to what's happening here in Canada. Canada has finally, after 150 years of oppression and genocide of indigenous people, they have finally got to a place where they're at least paying lip service to colonialism. They're saying it was in the past and it doesn't exist anymore. That's not true. We know it's ongoing. But at least we're at the point where we can openly acknowledge the territory we're on. And we can say that there were people here who, and still are, who have lived here for thousands of years, and this is their territorial ancestral land. It's the same situation for Palestinians, except that the whole world has shut its eyes to the reality of that situation, to the truth, which is that that land is the homeland of many, many Palestinians who are now displaced throughout the world.
Even at the University of British Columbia, the home of CITR, the BDS movement, which supports the boycott of products and companies from occupied Palestinian territories, has been unpopular. 52% voted against the university's most recent student society referendum on adopting BDS policies. The group Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights, of which Sophia is a co-president, was at the forefront of this BDS resolution.
It's obviously not an easy cause that you're tagging yourself with, and especially in UBC, there has been a pushback against BDS. What's been the reaction of people in Vancouver like to this whole issue?
Well, I think that in general, the population of both UBC and Vancouver at large are aware of the issue. However, there's not enough people that want to get actively involved and support the cause. Unfortunately, the opposition is quite strong in this regard, and there's a lot of misinformation about it.
Why do you think this is happening? Do you know why are people not really getting involved and there's like a stronger opposition than there is for the cause?
It's difficult really to determine that. I think just maybe there's not enough, incentive for people to act. But hopefully we can all unite as just human beings and for basic human rights. And finally, maybe this is like the last straw where we can all push towards a better world, including where Palestinians are included in that better world.
The demonstrations on the first day were fairly peaceful and took place without incident, except this little skirmish on the sidelines that was recorded by our reporter, Alex DeBoer.
I also speak for human rights.
Yeah, I speak for oppressed. Human rights. I speak
you
for
can't really say you speak for human rights.
Two individuals holding Israeli flags approached the rally before one of their flags was taken away from them by pro-Palestinian protesters. The exchange that followed was tense.
We gave you a place to stay when you need it. We gave you a place to stay when you need it. We gave you a place to stay when you need it. And then you stole it. Then you stole it.
You believe with the occupation or no? This is the bottom line. This is the bottom line. We live in 21st century, and shaming you as a human being support occupation.
I think that
you
we
go
should
check
be able
the checkpoints. You live there. I live there. You go check the checkpoints. How human? How dare you? Are you support occupation till now? Shaming you. Shaming. We live peace. You and me and anyone, I want peace. One country for the like Canada. Can you accept that? Zionism will not accept it.
Our reporter Alex DeBoer spoke to one of the individuals who brought the Israeli flag.
The U.S. is just recognizing the reality on the ground. The fact is, no other country in the world has its capital decided by other countries. All of Israel's governing institutions are in Jerusalem. Therefore, that is their capital. We control it. So, the United States, as I said, is just recognizing the reality of the situation.
Can you see the Palestinian perspective to that? Like, do you think it's just totally unreasonable that people are protesting?
I mean, they have every right to protest. And yes, I think that there are some issues involved. There could be better access to holy sites for all religions. It's very complicated why that doesn't exist, and both sides have some fault in it. At the same time, I don't think that handing over East Jerusalem to the Palestinians is the correct answer. If you look at when Jordan controlled East Jerusalem up until 1967, the Kotel, the holiest site in Judaism, was inaccessible to Jews. They were not allowed to go there. Not only that, but it was used as a garbage dump. So it's understandable that we're skeptical that they're going to allow us to practice our religion freely and openly in East Jerusalem.
Do you really think there's a threat to Jews practicing Judaism in Israel?
First of all, Jews still aren't allowed on the Temple Mount, even though it's technically Israeli territory.
But what about all the people in, all the Palestinians who can't move through Palestine, who have settlements encroaching on their land, who are blocked by the separation wall from getting to work, who have to pass through 3 checkpoints every day to, like, get to their family or to work?
I think it's unfortunate, the situation. However, I don't think that Israel's the one who's at fault for everything. A lot of it is, well, look, in 2000, at the Camp David Accords, Israel actually promised the Palestinians East Jerusalem in order to get peace, but the Palestinians rejected it. My point is that we've tried to, you know, create peace with the Palestinians numerous times, and we've given the offers that they've wanted, but they've rejected everything, because at the end of the day, we don't think that the Palestinian leadership wants to negotiate, and unfortunately, the main victims of the Palestinian leadership's corruption are the Palestinian people.
The Democracy Watch team was not the only audience to this heated exchange of words. This is what Sophia had to say about the incident.
So, of course, it is their right to counter-protest, but unfortunately, their narrative is based on mostly lies and on hatred, even though it is our side usually that is accused of those things. And I would hope that perhaps we can, you know, actually start a dialogue so that we can work towards a peaceful solution instead of always just throwing hate at each other.
But Sarah sees very little value in having a dialogue.
I don't necessarily encourage sitting down and having a conversation with Zionists, for instance. There were a few today that tried to disrupt us, and they tried to provoke people. And it's clear why they're here. It's because they want to provoke and because they want to create a conflict in order to get a few people arrested. And then they can turn it around and say that we were aggressive. When they're the ones, they have no right being here in this protest. They shouldn't be here with their Israeli flags provoking people because we know where that's going
to
go.
We later learned that Sarah had spoken too soon. On the second day of demonstrations on Saturday, December 9th, people rallied to support Palestine outside the Trump Tower in downtown Vancouver. Things started out peacefully and unremarkably, but then the likeness of an Israeli flag made out of cardboard was burnt by a Palestinian demonstrator. While coverage of the Vancouver rally in local media outlets was scant, the flag burning prompted media attention from outlets like CTV and Global News. It also attracted allegations of anti-Semitism and intimidation from B'nai B'rith Canada, a conservative Jewish organization. The heated debate on the first day of the rally and the flag burning on the second are a reflection of the volatile nature of this long-drawn conflict. Decades of peace talks, negotiations, deliberations, and frictions between the two sides jostle with each other and remain fresh as ever. And in the midst of this, President Donald Trump's erratic decision that bears international significance could effectively derail an already fragile peace process. In this grim climate, we asked people at the march what future course of action Palestinians might take. Here's Sophia.
So what do you think is the next step for the Palestinian diaspora in Vancouver? Or like yourself, even though you're not a Palestinian, you're closely associated with this cause.
So I'm no expert, but I do think that we can't just wait, sit back and relax and just wait to see what happens next. I think this is the time for the everyday citizen to tell their government what they want them to represent them as, what the policies of their country should be. And that includes the Canadian policies towards Palestine and Palestinians. And so I think this is really the ideal time for all Canadians, basically, who believe in justice and human rights, to voice their opinion, to either actively boycott Israeli products that support the occupation or that profit off of them, and to, you know, tell the representatives what they want them to act as in Parliament.
Speaking, let it become more aware, I guess. People can really just start looking for themselves into the Palestinian conflict instead of looking at the news or looking at a biased news source or somebody tells you something. Look for yourself and look at the history of the region and what's been going on. And I think for a more balanced dialogue, we need to separate anti-Semitism from anti-Zionism and being against the apartheid state of Israel, and just putting religion aside and realizing that this is not really a religious conflict, rather it's a political conflict, and that they've been taking our rights for the past almost 70 years.
Mahmoud Darwish, a celebrated Arab poet and an icon of the Palestinian struggle, once said that history laughs at both the victim and the aggressor. But gauging the sentiments from the Vancouver rally, it looks like both Palestinians and Israelis dispute not only who's the victim and the aggressor, but also who's on the right side of history.
The holidays got you down? Whether it's pressure to make it perfect, tension with loved ones, unfulfilled expectations, dissatisfaction at work, or unrest in the world at large. Maybe combined with winter weather and darkening days, all of this can contribute to self-judgment and guilt, sadness, and lethargy. It's a tough time of year, and psychotherapist Jeffrey B. Rubin has 7 handy tips and tricks to help you out. 1. Connect with those you love. 2. Have realistic expectations. Seek good enough rather than perfect. 3. Cherish what you're grateful for. 4. Build in what helps you flourish. 5. Create healthy boundaries with loved ones. 6. Constructively address family conflicts through empathetic listening and compassionate feedback. And 7. Help those in need. Good luck out there, and I'm proud of you.
newspapers and magazines did you regularly read to stay informed and to understand the
world? I've read most of them, again, with a great appreciation for the press, for the media.
But like, what ones specifically?
All of them.
Want to know more than Sarah Palin? Join CITR's Current Affairs Coordinator Alex DeBoer every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. in room 2514 in the AMS Nest to learn best practices for covering local current affairs topics for radio. The weekly training sessions will cover writing for radio, determining newsworthiness, media ethics, interviewing, writing balanced stories, and more.
And we're back with more Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. We've been focusing the second half of the hour on Vancouver's weekend rallies opposing America's recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and their plan to move the U.S. embassy there from its current location in Tel Aviv. Democracy Watch member Aidan Tong reached out to Hillel BC, the largest Jewish student organization in Western Canada, with a location on UBC's Poincaré campus. Tong spoke with Managing Director Sam Heller about the international outcry against America's recent embassy move and whether the flag burning that took place during last Saturday's pro-Palestine demonstration should be interpreted as anti-Semitic or anti-Israel, and whether there's a difference between those two things. After this interview, we'll hear a live call-in response from Hamath Al-Hamayed, a Palestinian student at UBC and member of the UBC group Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights.
All right, so the first question is, what is the stance of the Hillel community on the protests that occurred Friday and Saturday evening in response to Trump's decision?
I mean, I think when you say, like, the Hillel community, I mean, look, Hillel is made up of a lot of different people that come in with various, you know, different opinions on things. Mm. But I speak to you as an organization, as a representative of the organization, but I not necessarily as, you know, Hillel students. I mean, it's a wide variety of individuals. So
yeah.
I don't know if I wouldn't be able to answer that in the sense of, you know, wider community. This is obviously very multifaceted thing.
All right, so if I could change the question from the perspective of the Hillel organization or from your opinion?
Yeah, just ask the full question again if you don't mind. Just so
okay.
I know what I'm...
What is the stance of the Hillel organization on the protests that occurred Friday and Saturday evening?
Hillel BC is in, you know, we believe that people have the right to, you know, their freedom to expression, and
okay.
As long as it's done in a peaceful, respectful manner.
Mm. Also, I understand while I was at the rallies on Friday and Saturday evening saw a piece of cardboard resembling the Israeli flag being burnt in defiance of the occupation from Israel. How do these actions affect the Hillel organization and the Hillel community?
I mean, the only thing I can really say to that is I don't necessarily see flag burning as being part of sort of like respectful and or peaceful dialogue or protest or whatever. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, people can burn a flag. You know, Hillel focuses on wanting to, you know, get somewhere with this, and so I think we'd rather focus on dialogue as opposed to things like that. I think that, you know, from a personal perspective, seeing a flag burning doesn't necessarily engender my wanting to have that sort of a dialogue, but that's what I would want to focus on.
Okay. Also, movements such as the BDS organization were in attendance at these rallies. Has the stance of the BDS movement from the Hillel organization changed, and has the statement from Rabbi Bregman changed as well, or is it still a staunch disapproval?
I don't know exactly which statement you're speaking of with respect to Rabbi Bregman, so I can't speak to that. I can simply say that LLBC believes that the BDS movement as a whole is anti-Semitic.
Okay.
I don't think, you know, we don't believe that it brings anything positive to the table. table in terms of, you know, putting a step forward and, you know, a peaceful resolution to the conflict. You know, I think we've been, you know, BDS calls for the destruction of the state of Israel at the end of the day. And so I don't see that as being sort of a helpful step forward. And that's been our position all along. And I think there's been, you know, we did an interview for the UBC, I believe, last year or 2 years ago, maybe. And the position hasn't changed since then.
Okay. And just through this question, there was kind of complexities within the protests that happened and even afterwards. So I'm just going to move back towards that last question I asked. And I just want to ask, from the Hillel organization's perspective, with the burning of a resemblance of a Israeli flag, some would say that signifies anti-Semitism, while others would say that signifies defiance to the occupation. In your perspective, and from the perspective of the Hillel organization, what do you think that signifies?
I think that's a really difficult question to ask because I think it depends on the context under which something is happening.
Okay.
And I personally was not at the rally and I wasn't at the protest. And so I find it really hard to comment on that, to be honest.
Okay. If I could simplify the question, do you think being anti-Israel is anti-Semitic?
I think that once again, that is, not necessarily. And I think it depends from where a person is coming from. I believe that denying the Jewish people the right to self-determination is anti-Semitic. Because you're denying a group of people a right that is a right for everyone else. But being, you know, and that's why it's a very complex, you know, this isn't a black and white thing. It's very complex. So it's really hard to, start to really give you a good solid answer on that one. But I think that it really depends from where a person is coming from. I think unfair and undue criticism of Israel is anti-Semitic. You know, it is totally legitimate to criticize Israel when things are going wrong, just as it's totally legitimate to criticize Canada, to criticize every country in the world. And so it really just comes from, where a person is coming from when doing that. I think is the best way that I can answer that.
Okay. And lastly, what would you, so with Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital, what would you say to the international criticism that Trump has been getting, and how is this criticism against Trump, how has this affected the Hillel organization and the Hillel community?
Which criticism are you speaking of?
So there's been a bunch of countries that have disapproved of Trump's policy on Jerusalem. So this has ranged from France, the UK, Saudi Arabia, Iran, even China. There's just been a bunch of international outcry type stuff.
sorry, if you do me a favor, ask the question again, because okay. This is obviously something that I want to be able to answer.
Okay, yeah, totally. So with Trump's decision with his policy on Jerusalem to be recognized as the capital of Israel, there has been a bunch of international criticism against his decision, and this international criticism has come from the UK, has come from France, Germany, Saudi Arabia, Iran. There's been a spew of countries. We were just wondering, how has the criticism affected the Hillel organization and the Hillel community?
Okay, I would say that there are, you know, various, once again, I can't speak for the Hillel community because there's a lot of different folks that come in through the door here. We're a big tent and we want to have a lot of different ideas and opinions. Organizationally, I would say that the reality is that Jerusalem has been the capital of the state of Israel basically since 1950, It's been de facto, you know, that's where the parliament is, that's where the Supreme Court is, that's where many, you know, government meetings are held. So, you know, it's not, you know, this is like a U.S. foreign policy issue for the Jewish community, Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. This isn't really like a big thing for us, I would say. It's been the capital of Israel. It's been the eternal capital of the Jewish people for close to 3,000 years. This doesn't change anything for us.
Okay. All right. For the Hillel community, I'm just asking more about, like, has there been any external negativity towards the community from Trump's decision? That's what I mean by that.
I would argue that that you just need to look at what happened in Sweden with the firebombing of a synagogue there, which were protests ostensibly against, you know, Trump's decision, but it ended up affecting the Jewish community there in a negative way. So, I mean, I think, anything that is said about the Middle East and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, there's always going to be blowback. There's always going to be, consequences, either positive or negative. And this is just, you know, one more thing that is happening that's in the news that's being, you know, either sensationalized or not sensationalized, that, you know, just be part of the ongoing saga. I mean, look, from, you know, Hillel's perspective, we would love to see a negotiated peace treaty. We would love to see a resolution to things. We're all about having a conversation about this, to have a dialogue about it. It's, you know, we've been saying that for years now. And I think that, you know, that's what we need on campus more than ever.
Okay. Last question. Kind of just a runoff from the previous question. So we talked about the international criticism Trump has received from the international community, but some from the protests, specifically the pro-Palestine demonstrators, they argue that with the annexation of the West Bank and Gaza, and now I guess Jerusalem, that's what they're saying. Would you have more of an understanding of why they are protesting because of that?
I'm not here to talk. I don't know, you know, that's not for me to decide. I mean, the terms you're using right now are, like, it was a pretty loaded term. Like, Israel has not annexed the West Bank. It has not even necessarily annexed East Jerusalem. Is not annexed Gaza, so, like, nothing
okay.
has been
annexed. No, I'm just speaking from the perspective of the protests that were given,
sure,
during Friday and Saturday.
I'm speaking, like, in a factual basis, like,
okay.
that has occurred in that regard.
Okay, but if you were to interpret these protesters, like, if we were to interpret these UBC protesters on Friday and Saturday evening from this perspective, would you have any opinion on that, or no?
I mean, listen, as I said, people are free to express themselves
yeah.
and get their message out, and I'm not here to tell folks that they should or should not be doing that. If this is, you know, this is a trigger for individuals, that's on them. I'm telling you that the de facto reality is that Jerusalem has been the capital of Israel for 68 years. This isn't... that, you know, that there isn't a change in that regard. My hope is that that things will, you know, that there will be a breakthrough in negotiations, a peace treaty, and this is what we're about. The LLBC is supportive of a two-state solution. We're supportive of a negotiated treaty. But, you know, that's not necessarily for me to comment on how that's going to look and if folks should be going out and protesting based upon... a statement made by the United States.
Okay. Yeah, I think that should be all.
I think that's...
Okay. Would you like to add any other additional comments?
if you can just sort of, you know, I'm wondering if you could kind of just go back into like what you've understood by the things that I've said to you.
Okay. Yeah. Totally. So I'm just kind of bringing the perspective right now, from the protesters out on Friday and Saturday evening, because we've only gotten responses from them, and you're the first person from the Hillel organization to give me a statement. So what I'm understanding is that
folks won't stop us from doing that.
Yeah.
I just think that it should be done in like a peaceful and respectful manner.
Mm.
And I guess I'm thinking that when I see a flag burning, it's not, you know, you have the right to do that. It doesn't make me, you know, as an Israeli, it doesn't necessarily make me want to have a conversation with you, which I think we need to, you know, is really what we need to be doing, right?
Mm.
That's sort of where I'm going with that.
Okay.
Like that sort of influence the fact that really what needs to happen on campus is we need to hear each other's narratives, right? Because if we can't sit and have a conversation here, it's, you know, imagine, you know, how the folks can have that conversation there. But the reality is that they are having that conversation there. There are groups that are doing that. Like Hillel brought out, helped bring out this group called the Peace Factory last year, which is an Israeli and a Palestinian who were doing coexistence work. Like, that's what Hillel's about. You know, like, that's where I would want to be taking the conversation. The fact that we need to have conversation, we need to understand where each other's coming from, we need to move forward. It's a really complex issue. And that's where we are. We're about dialogue and bringing folks together.
Okay.
Right? I mean, that to me would be a message that I want the UBC community to have.
Yeah. That's okay.
Stand on this, you know.
And this is Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. We'll be right back after a short break.
More about fashion. We asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know, let's say, you know, someone buys a clothing.
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Cool. Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
Nikkei National Museum's Hastings Park 1942 exhibit marks the 75th anniversary of Japanese-Canadian internment. Visit the exhibit until January 13th to see Japanese Problem, a contemporary performance piece which offers a glimpse into a dark episode of history at the Pyrenees Livestock Barn. Nikkei National Museum is located in Burnaby and entry is by donation.
The Crane Library is looking for student volunteers to record textbooks for those who cannot use print at the university. If you are a UBC student who is computer literate with an ability to read university material aloud and you have a willingness to learn new techniques, we ask for a two-hour commitment once a week. For additional information and to set up an audition, call 604-822-6114 or email crane.volunteer@ubc.ca.
I think the news midweek, when midweek news broke that Teo Dezar wasn't going to be playing in this game.
Pyrenees growing sport, and to do it on a university campus with an educational message behind it.
They'll be facing off against all the big teams from all the other conferences and the nationals.
Want to be a CITR sports broadcaster? Looking for a cool way to get involved in UBC sports? Then email sports101@citr.ca or come by our station in the Nest to find out more. See you soon.
You're a true friend.
member of CITR and Discorder, but are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 for discounts on Main Street at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Biltmore Cabaret, Red Cat Records, Lucky Comics, The Wallflower Modern Diner, Neptune Records, The Rag Machine, The Regional Assembly of Text, and so many more.
The Crane Library is looking for student volunteers to record textbooks for those who cannot use print at the university. If you are a UBC student who is computer literate with an ability to read university material aloud and you have a willingness to learn new techniques, we ask for a two-hour commitment once a week. For additional information and to set up an audition, call 604-822-6114 or email crane.volunteer@ubc.ca.
La Fondation canadienne pour le dialogue des cultures présente son nouveau projet Baldwin et La Fontaine vers le gouvernement responsable. Apprenez en famille, entre amis et à l'école sur l'engagement de ces deux personnages importants dans l'avènement du gouvernement canadien tel qu'on le connaît aujourd'hui. Visitez le site baldwinlafontaine.ca pour y découvrir des capsules vidéo, des documentaires et un guide pédagogique. Participez au concours national en ligne pour courir la chance de gagner un voyage à Toronto pour deux personnes ou une bourse d'études post-secondaire.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theatre, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theatre, visit their website at www.riotheatre.ca.
Ever heard of Pitch Perfect? UBC a cappella can sing on harmony in Q. Made up of 100 members across four choirs, the student-led club regularly performs on and off campus. Check out UBC a cappella on Facebook for more information regarding their Aka Amazing end-of-term concerts. My church offers no absolutes. She tells me worship in the bedroom.
Hello, nerds. Look at your clubs. Now back to me. Now back to your clubs. Now back to me. Sadly, I'm not part of your club, but if you join the AMS Sci-Fi Fantasy Society, I could bring the club to you. Look down, back up. Where are you? You're sitting with your friends and enjoying a nerdy movie. What's in your hand? Back at me. I have it. It's a membership card giving you access to the 2,000 books in our Sci-Fi Fantasy Library, as well as access to our book club and writing circle. Look again. The card is now a guaranteed 10% off at White Dwarf Bookstore. Anything is possible when you join the AMS Sci-Fi Fantasy Society. I'm on the radio.
Find us on Facebook at UBC Sci-Fi and Fantasy Society or email us at sfssoco@gmail.com. Our clubroom is located on the third floor of the Nest, room 3206D.
The UBC Concrete Canoe Team is a student engineering design team. Every year, we design, build, and race a canoe made entirely out of concrete. Whether you're in first year, fourth year, or anything in between, we would love to have you as a member. Check out our Facebook page, UBC Concrete Canoe, or our website, guessitfloats.com, for more details.
AMS Food Bank. Your access to money during the studies at UBC will most likely be limited, but it is a priority of the AMS Food Bank to ensure your access to food is not. The AMS Food Bank provides emergency food relief 7 days a week for all UBC students. To volunteer with the food bank or for inquiries about how to take advantage of the services provided, contact them at foodbank@ams.ubc.ca. For more information, find the AMS Food Bank on Facebook or feel free to visit anytime across from the Wellness Center and Sprouts.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day. Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
Is Coco Hamamatsu talking about koi fish in a pond or the youth at CITR and Discorder? Get info on your wares, services, or events directly to students, musicians, artists, and all the coolest cats from Bellingham to Squamish by advertising with CITR and Discorder on air, in print, or online. This can be your reality if you email us at advertising@CITR.ca or call 604-822-4342. Visit CITR.ca for rates and packages.
There is nothing good about winter. The days are shorter, the sun isn't as sunny, and it's freaking cold.
Yeah, but there's also the annual winter issue of Discorder.
Pick up your copy of Discorder, that magazine that's salty enough to melt the iciest of seasonal affective disorders from CITR, at one of our over 100 distribution locations. To share some fireside cheer with Kathleen Hepburn, a local independent director, enjoy a cup of metaphorical cocoa with BB over their first full album release, make some non-denominational sugar cookies at Chinatown's Pollyanna Library with Jonathan Q, take a sleigh ride through CITR's seasonal special listening guide, and of course, enjoy reviews of local shows and new releases. And an extra special holiday shout-out to our advertisers, Tambor Concerts, the Rickshaw Theater, the Rio Theater, the Cinematheque, and Mint Records.
I guess winter's not that bad.
An enabled FM chip in your smartphone can make the difference in an emergency situation by allowing you to still hear critical updates. It will also let you listen to the local FM station using 3 times less battery and 20 times less data than streaming. Visit freeradioonmyphone.ca to see how you can get involved by contacting your carrier and signing our petition. Would you like to get updates on your smartphone in an emergency, even if a cell tower is down? It is possible if the FM chip is activated in your phone. Visit freeradioonmyphone.ca to see how you can get involved by contacting your carrier and signing our petition.
LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about bike maintenance in a relaxed environment led by queer mechanics and volunteers. It takes place on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bike Kitchen on UBC's campus. Bring your own bike and fix them with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or learn by watching other folks work on their bikes. Beginners are always welcome. This event is entirely free to attend and there will be free pizza. For more information, visit bikecoop.ca.
I'm Melissa. I'm a settler from Epiquet, or Prince Edward Island, the traditional territories of the Mi'kmaq peoples.
Hi, I'm Ben. I'm Jewish and Korean and grew up mostly in Shawnee Territory in the United States.
My name is Autumn Schnell, and I am Treaty 11 Gwich'in and Inuvialuit on my mom's side, and on my dad's side, I am of German descent.
And we're members of the Indigenous Collective.
Do you have a passion for Indigenous issues?
What about decolonization?
Our show, Unceded Airways, airs every Monday at 11 a.m., so come by CITR to hang out.
If you're interested in Indigenous representation and empowerment, or just want to hang out with cool folks who are, then this collective is for you.
Email volunteer at CITR.ca to get involved.
Know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the Helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the Helpline is one of the many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The Helpline number is 604-696-4666. Or contact us at aidsvancouver.org.
We are back with CITR's Democracy Watch. Just before going into the break, you heard an interview with Sam Heller, who was the managing director of Hillel BC and News Collective member Aidan Tong. I am Rahmatullah Sheikh. And right now we have a special guest live on the line. He is Haitham Al-Hamideh, a UBC biology student and a Palestinian native and member of the UBC group Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights. Welcome to Democracy Watch, Haitham. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Hey, great. Thank you so much for joining us. Could you first tell our listeners a little bit about your background and about your life living in the occupied West Bank?
So I'm a Palestinian who's born in Jordan. My grandfathers and grandmothers were kicked out of Palestine when the occupation took place.
So I'm wondering if you got an opportunity to listen to Sam Heller from Hillel BC. And he gave a sort of complicated answer when we asked him if being anti-Israel is the same as being anti-Semitic. What are your thoughts on that?
What I would say is I would define let me explain what anti-Semitism is. Anti-Semitism is hostility to, prejudice, or discrimination against Jews. This definition goes against my own beliefs as a Palestinian. We ourselves have Palestinian Jews living in Palestine, and they're called Al-Suma.
Right. Yeah.
And from my point of view, we're not anti-Semitism. We're not anti-Semite, but we're anti-Zionists.
Right. So I'm just wondering, what was your first response when you saw the flag burning or the facsimile of a flag that was burned at the square in Vancouver? What was the first thing that came to your mind? Is this something that you've seen before?
So if you allow me to express my opinion, I cannot express the opinion of the whole Palestinian population, but in my opinion, I stand against burning the Israeli flag. Burning this flag does nothing towards the goal of the Palestinian cause. I call for a productive and respectful dialogues between the two parties, especially in Vancouver. And in my case, I come from the University of British Columbia, which is a place of mine. I myself attended the protest. The flag was burnt, yes, but at the same time, we should remember that the flag was burnt by young teenagers who directly responded to their emotions and didn't give it much thought as to how this would really advance the cause. I stand against burning the Israeli flag in Vancouver.
Right. So, Haitham, tell me, what has been the reaction of people from Vancouver? And when you went to the protest, we noticed that there were people from diverse communities and groups, and that's also what we played out in our radio story some time back. What was the atmosphere like, and what was the response of the Vancouver communities?
Of course, there's a lot of emotions included in this, but again, I would say I cannot express emotions of the whole Palestinian population, but I would say that we were really disappointed.
Right, and what about the media coverage? Did you track how the Canadian media outlets were reporting on the rally?
Personally, I didn't, because what I've heard from President Trump about his decision made me really sad, and I just, you know, cut myself out from looking at the media or something. I just went to the protest, and I've seen things that I didn't like personally. Yes.
Yeah, and that's the impression that we got as well. So what is the Palestinian community doing now in a way to overcome this sadness and overcome this reality and move forward from here? Where do you think this whole thing will go?
My friend, I'll tell you something. The Palestinian people, Palestine stands against Zionism. And I say the Palestinian flag is for everyone. Related to what happened and how the Palestinians react towards this, we've been under the occupation for more than 70 years now. And it's something that we hear all the time throughout the years, and it's not new. We've been under this occupation since a long time, and we would say that we're still strong, we're still loving, we're still us. I would say that Palestinians welcome everyone to their countries, to their country.
Yeah.
Palestine is for everyone. The only thing we need from people is to understand that we need equal rights in our own home.
Right. Yeah. I'm wondering, is your generation still up for peaceful negotiation and dialogue? Because Sam Hiller from Hillel House, he said that we want peaceful dialogue and we want constructive dialogue going forward. Do you still, that element of dialogue still holding true after this decision?
Absolutely, man. We should have dialogues, but we should have productive dialogues. We should have dialogues where when we say our opinion, the other party takes it in and understands it deeply. I know they suffered, but we suffered too. Dialogue is a very productive manner to move with the case. Violence is not a thing that would do anything for the Palestinian cause. As we have seen, you know, burning the flag was a very childish thing. I repeat my words, saying that it came out from teenagers who reacted to their emotions, and I don't blame them. But yes, dialogues are mature. Dialogues are productive if we reach to the fact that Zionism is a very negative move towards us, the Palestinians, and towards every other religion other than Judaism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're a member of the Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights. It's an organization in UBC, and the other organization in UBC also is Hillel House. So what's the relationship like? Have you had sit down and talks with each other? How does the relationship go?
Personally, I attended the Peace Factory. I heard my partner from Hillel talk about the Peace Factory. I attended it, me and my friend Laith Frijat and my friend Abu Bakr Khan. We attended the Peace Factory. We sat there and listened to what the other party has had to offer. As you mentioned, I'm from the SPHR, and I just want to tell you what BDS exactly stands for, because a lot of people think that BDS is anti-Semitic, but it is not. As I said previously, I said that it is not anti-Semitic, but it's anti-Zionist. And BDS, if people want to know what BDS is, I urge them to go and read about it. BDS is boycott, divestment, and sanction, and it has three main objectives. Number one is ending its occupation and colonization of all Palestinian lands and dismantling the wall. Number two, recognizing the fundamental rights of Palestinian citizens to full equality. Number three, respecting, protecting, and promoting the rights of Palestinian refugees to return to their homes and properties as stipulated in UN Resolution 194. And at the end of this, I would say the Palestinian flag is for everyone. We're just against Zionism.
Right. And how does Hillel House respond to that when you lay out these three objectives?
At the end of the day, I do not want to say anything about Hillel House. fact, I went over and I sat at the Peace Factory, and I don't like to waste my time to pay attention to what the other party has to offer from aggressive actions. I only aim for productive arguments, and I don't pay attention to putting the blame on anyone except those who are with the Zionism movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this term has come up so many times, Haitham. So can you tell me, from your experiences and from whatever you've heard from elders, what is, in the end, the difference between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism?
Anti-Semitism is basically just discrimination against Jews. As a Palestinian, this is not from my own belief. I cannot discriminate against Jews. And anti-Zionism is the fact that we're against something that discriminates, that holds with the Jewish movement and neglects every other religion. I aim for having a place just like Canada, just like how we live here. Each and every religion is welcome here. Each and every nationality is welcome here. But we can't have one sector ruling the country.
Right. Thank you so much, Haitham, for joining us and contributing to what is really a very important conversation. We appreciate your time.
No problem. Thank you, man. I appreciate it for having me.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Have a good day. See you. Bye.
Bye. Well, that's all we have for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Join us again next time on Thursday at 5 p.m. for yet another episode of Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM, bringing you alternative and undercovered current affairs coverage on Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. I am Rahmatullah Sheikh. Good night, and stay tuned for more CITR programming coming on the other side.